friendship's sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you. We're glad you're here.
Reading from Hebrews chapter 10, verse 19. Therefore, brothers, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, Hebrews 10, verse 19, O magnify the Lord with me, let us exalt his name together. It is Monday, July 14th, 2025. Today we're looking at Hebrews chapter 10, verses 19 through 39. Pastor Matt Clark of CU Church will start by asking us a question. Have you ever started something you didn't think you could finish? As he teaches the importance of finishing what you've begun. Here's Pastor Matt Clark on today, the Monday edition of Mark and Friends.
Have you ever started something that you didn't think you could finish? Anybody ever done that? If you've ever tried to put together a child's toy, you can say yes to that. Yes, right? If you've ever bought furniture from IKEA, you can say yes to that. Right? Have you ever started something that you didn't think you could finish? That's the place that these Christians, these new followers of Jesus, are in. And there's reasons why they don't think they can finish. Some of it's persecution. There's a whole list of things you can make that. But they've started something that maybe they don't think they can finish. And the Hebrews writer is writing them and he's saying, you can finish. I've never ran a marathon. Anybody in here run a marathon? I have not. I think most of you are part crazy that do that. And I have mad respect for you that you can actually do that. My wife and my father-in-law ran the Chicago Marathon a handful of years ago. It must have been like 10, 12 years ago, Chicago Marathon. I did not run. But they trained, they did all the stuff they could do to run it. And I remember the race day. It was a cool day. It was kind of rainy and a little bit chilly. And I don't know if you know this or not, but a marathon is 26.2 miles. I barely like to drive my car 26.2 miles. It's a long way. And I made this decision that I wanted to try to find them as many times as I could along the race route. And so I got the map and I studied it. And I also found the Starbucks along the way so that I could stop there as well. But I studied the map closely so that I wanted to try to see if I could find them 10, 11, 12 times and wave and talk and cheer and yell. And so I did this. And so they're running the race. And about every mile and a half, there I am popping up, just jumping out in the crowd, waving, hollering, cheering. And what am I saying? You guys have cheered these things on before. What am I saying? You got this. You can do it. Come on. Keep going. Keep running. I'm glad I'm not running. Keep running. Right? Maybe I'm holding up my hot chocolate as they're, hey, just have a drink. Right? And I'm doing this and I'm catching them as many places as I can get. And I vividly remember somewhere around mile 22, 23, I pop out and they got three or four more miles to go. And I see them coming. I see them coming and I recognize that they are about done. Like, you know, the look you see, you can tell like, I don't know if they're going to, wow, I don't know. And so I'm thinking about what am I going to say? How can I say this to them? And they get closer to me and, you know, there's a turn coming and I say to them, the finish is right around the corner, just around the turn. You're almost there. It's nowhere near anywhere where they're at, nowhere near. But I'm saying it to them like, you can finish this, like you can make it. And I say all that to say this, it's what the Hebrews writer is doing. That sometimes when we walk into a relationship with Jesus and we don't know what all that means, we don't know what all that looks like, that it can be like a marathon race. Some of the miles are easy. Lots of the miles are hard. And he's saying, finish what you've begun. Finish this journey that you've started with Jesus. If you remember all the way back, you might not, in Hebrews chapter 2, he started with this phrase. He said, don't drift away. Don't drift away. And I was reading it this week, and here's what I came up with. How? I don't know if you were thinking about that. I was thinking about how. There's 100 things I could talk to answer that how question, but as we read today, there are 4 statements that I want to bring out of this. I hope they make sense in your own journey with where you're at this morning and what it is that you're doing in a journey with Jesus. But I want to bring those 4 statements out as we read it. But keep this idea in mind that he is encouraging us to finish what we've begun. Here's what he says. Verse 19 of chapter 10. Therefore, brothers and sisters, since we have confidence to enter the holy places by the blood of Jesus, by the new and living way that he opened for us through the curtain that is through his flesh. And since we have a great priest over the house of God, that he starts, actually verse 19 all the way down to 25 is one long sentence. And he starts that sentence by saying, therefore. Did you see it? Therefore. That's a key that we all know this, that is connecting us to what he just said. And he just spent the last few verses of this and what we talked about last week talking about the sacrifice of Jesus. That Jesus made this significant sacrifice for all of us in this room and everybody in the world. And that sacrifice was a great sacrifice that he paid on our behalf so that we could experience forgiveness. And he's speaking about that sacrifice. And so he says, therefore, we have, it's a fact, that we can have confidence. I like this word, but I needed to define it for myself because it doesn't mean, sometimes when we hear the word confidence, at least I do, I think cockiness or I think arrogant. That's not what it means. It's referring to a boldness, that we have this boldness that comes along with like a transparency that we don't have to hide from it. There's no fear in it, that we have this confidence that comes along with this humility. And what can we do? We have confidence to enter the holy places by the blood of Jesus. If you've been with us for a while, you might remember that the holy places was the place that people would go to meet God. But somebody had to do it on their behalf. They couldn't do it by themselves. There was a high priest. The high priest went into that space. And Jesus has been talking about how he is the high priest, that we don't need somebody else to do it for us. We can have confidence, the boldness to walk into his presence by ourselves, on our own, anytime we want to. And he says, by the new, he describes it as new, meaning that they didn't have the ability to do this in the old way. This new way provides you the ability to have access to God. And then he uses this phrase, he says, curtain. And I don't know if you know where that goes, but they would have known exactly what he meant when he said curtain, and they wouldn't have been thinking about their shower curtain, right? They would have been thinking about this curtain that was in this temple, this tabernacle, this place that they would go to have access to God. And only one person could go past that curtain, and it was the high priest. But you know what happened during the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross? That curtain was torn, and that curtain was torn from the top down, meaning that God did it. And when that curtain was torn, it told all of these people that you now have the ability to walk in and have access to God anytime that you want. And he's talking about that. At the very beginning of this, of where we're going today, he's saying, don't you forget who Jesus is and what he's done. And I'm gonna connect that to where I started this thing, that he's saying, finish what you've begun. How? By remembering what Jesus has done and never forgetting it. That sometimes it's the peace that we need. Remember that he went to a cross. Remember that he sacrificed his life. Remember that he showered grace and forgiveness and love and mercy on us. Remember what Jesus has done, and you have access to him. That's how. You see how this is going to go? See how this is going to go? All right, we'll keep going. Here we go. Verse 22, he says, let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith, with our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience, and our bodies washed with pure water. He says, let us draw near. This is Hebrew language. It's actually used a lot in Hebrews. You might remember some of them. But every time it's used, it's referring to approaching God, gaining access to God, that you can draw near. It's what the high priest did for all of these Jewish Christians. What he would do for them is that he would draw near to God on their behalf. And now he's saying to them, let us draw near. Let me give you a few of them. Hebrews chapter 4, verse 16. I'll read a few of these verses. He says, let us with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace in a time of need. Chapter 7, verse 25. Consequently, he is able to serve to the uttermost those who draw near to God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for them. Chapter 10, verse 1. For since the law has been a shadow of the good things to come instead of the true of these realities, it can never, by the same sacrifices that are continually offered every year, make perfect those who draw near. It can't do it. We draw near. Then the one I just read, then it shows up in chapter 11. It says, and without faith, it is impossible to please him, for whoever would draw near to God must believe. Over and over and over, the Hebrews writer used this, and it's an invitation to all of us that we would draw near. Now, have you noticed he used some language in there about having hearts that were sprinkled and bodies that were washed? He's referencing what Jesus did. That when Jesus went to the cross, his sacrifice It purified us from the inside out. It purified us from all the evil that's been inside of us. When we draw near to them, it's part of that. That it helps me. We were drawing near to God today. We sang songs. We're singing out these songs. We're praying these prayers. We were drawing near to God when we heard testimony from Jeremy as he was telling us about how he is drawing near. You see it? I think about it like this. We had VBS a couple weeks ago around here. Some of you participated, and thank you again. It was an awesome week with little kids. Every morning at VBS, if you don't know, VBS stands for Vacation Bible School, and it's where all the kids come to the church, and they teach them about Jesus. That's the quick version of what it is. There's a whole lot more than that, but they do lots of things. One of the things they do is they sing songs. And the first day, I walked in, and I'm just watching them sing, and it's amazing what they do. Is that the leaders of that, they take the words of the songs about Jesus and they give you these motions and these actions, and all the kids are dancing and they're learning what these words mean by these actions that they make. And it's interesting to me because as I watch that, you see these little kids and they hop up into the aisles and they run down in front of the stage, and there's nothing that is keeping them. They aren't concerned about what their friends think about what they're doing. They're just doing what the leader's instructing them to do, and the leader's instructing them to draw near to Jesus. And what is fascinating to me is you watch this at the beginning of the week and it's happening, and most of the adults are watching, the leaders, they're watching and they're smiling. You know what the leaders are doing by the last day? They're all doing the actions. That you have kids all the way down to kindergarten, and you have adults all the way up into their 80s doing actions to these songs. And you know what they're doing? They're drawing near to Jesus. Not concerned about what anybody else might think. Not concerned about what anybody else might say. There's a moment, just them and Jesus, and they're drawing near. And so the Hebrews writer is saying, finish what you've begun. And I say, how? By remembering what Jesus has done. We have access to him because of it. In this, by regularly approaching Jesus. You know what these Jewish religious people never had the choice to make? They couldn't choose every day to approach Jesus. They had to wait for somebody else to do it for them. And now he's saying, here's how you finish what you've begun. You approach Jesus all the time, anytime, whenever, wherever. You simply approach, draw near. Verse 23, then he says, let us hold fast. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. He says, let us hold fast. We talked about this in chapter 4. Hold fast means to keep a tight grip on something. It means that I grab hold of it so tightly that I'm not going to let go of it. It's not like a fish that you catch that slips out of your fingers. That's not what it is. It's something that you hold on so tightly that you're not going to let it get through. You hold fast to it. Hold fast to what? Our confession. Our confession is when we declare. Romans says it like this, that when I confess with my mouth and I believe in my heart that Jesus is Lord, you will be saved. And there's hope that comes with that. And he says that it is unwavering, meaning that it's unbendable, that it doesn't break. It's immutable. It means that you can't bend it. You can't break it. You can't destroy it. It's immutable. You can hold on to that hope. It's not like the hope that we have in a sports team that doesn't usually come true. This hope is unbreakable. And he says, let us hold fast to it. Let us keep a tight grip on it. Let me see if I can just illustrate it. I was reading some old pictures that I had on my phone this week. I think I've told you guys this before. My mom, like Jeremy's mom, lost a courageous battle to cancer. And periodically, I just go back and read some note cards that she had towards the end of her life that she would write things on. And it just connects me to her. You guys probably understand what I mean when I say that. So I was reading it, and I was reading some this week, and it was speaking into what the Hebrews writer is saying right now. Because remember, the idea is that finish what you've begun. And he's saying, hold fast, keep a tight grip on your confession, on your commitment to Jesus. What does that look like? I found this prayer that my mom would write. It was in October of that year, and I found this prayer, and I'm just going to read this prayer to you, and I hope it brings to life this idea of grabbing hold of something so tightly that you don't let it go. And when you grab hold of something tightly that's not Jesus, it's crisis coming. When it is Jesus, it's hope. She says, Lord, help me today to persevere, to cling to you. You hear the language? To cling to you, to draw strength from you, and to trust that even in my suffering, you are doing something good with my life, making me a woman who is growing into your peace. Finish what you've begun. How? Keeping a tight grip on the commitment that I have made to Jesus. Let me put it in this direction. Don't let life's changing circumstances move you away from the commitment that you've made with Jesus. It's so easy for what we face to take my eyes off the only one who can pull me through it. And he's saying, how do you finish? By not trusting everything else, but only trusting in him. Verse 24, and let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. He said, let us consider how to stir up one another. That's a word that's a little bit stronger than what it reads there. It means it's got a two sides to it. It's got a negative side and a positive side. Let me give you the negative side first. It means to agitate, to aggravate, to literally stir it up, to poke, to prod. If you have a sibling, you know exactly what this looks like. Right? There's a negative side, but that provoking is meant to motivate you, is meant to move you. If you've ever had a really good coach in your life, they're really good at this. That they can stir you up in a way that nobody else can. They can motivate you by pushing you in ways that nobody else can do. And it moves you to do something that they're inviting you to do that's good, but they have to agitate you to do it. If you've got a good parent, they've done this. They've picked, agitated, stirred you up. You see the idea. There's a negative side. There's a positive side, which is exactly what we say. It's just to encourage that I speak into you, or that my actions move you. They stir you up towards something specific, right? You see what it said? Towards love and good works. We would say it towards loving God and loving people. But did you notice that he connected it to something else? He says, not neglecting. Maybe I'll make this word a little bit stronger. The idea is that I abandon, or that I've forsaken something. And then he says, it's very specifically what it was. Don't abandon, don't forsaken meeting together. Meaning that this was happening. This was happening in their assembly, that there were people who had given their life to Jesus, but they'd stopped meeting together with the community of people that would do what? That would encourage them. This isn't the make sure you come to church every week part of the sermon. This isn't it. So don't think that's what this is. I'm telling you it's not. But this is, there's something about being in and around a community of people that provoke you towards love and good deeds that's significant. You know what can't happen in isolation? Encouragement. Encouragement. It needs a community of people. I gave you the coach side. I think we kind of get that side, or the teacher side, which is sometimes be the negative. Let me give you the positive side. I was just thinking about this. At my mom's funeral, it was hard in lots of ways. If you've ever experienced it, you understand it was hard. And it's one of those moments in my own life that I'm still wrestling with. I'm still trying to figure out. I'm still learning through. But in that particular moment, it was hard. And it's hard to think, like, I'm not for sure how I'm going to take the next step. You know what happened on that day is I was standing there in the line, and you're greeting people. And I noticed through the back of the door that people from this room had driven over 4 hours to come down to my hometown to walk into that space and to do nothing more than to give me and my wife and my kids a hug. And some of you are in this room. You see the idea. I wasn't for sure how to take the next step. I needed people to stir me up. The positive side of it. I needed people, I'll use this language, to breathe courage into my life so that I could take the next step. Remember, the Hebrews writer is saying, don't stop. Finish what you've begun. How? Remembering who Jesus is and what he has done. Keeping a tight grip on the commitment that I've made to Jesus. Meeting with a community that breathes courage into me so that I follow Jesus. And he defines what that looks like. Love and good works. And then he goes into a warning next. Like, that was like, oh, that's nice. I can grab hold of that. Then he goes into a warning, and he speaks pretty sternly towards these followers of Jesus, towards this group of people that he's speaking to. And he says, for if we go on sinning deliberately after receiving the knowledge of the truth, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sins, but a fearful expectation of judgment and a fury of fire that will consume the adversaries. Anyone who has set aside the law of Moses dies without mercy on the evidence of two or three witnesses. And he just gets real. What he's describing is that he says that if we go on sinning deliberately, meaning that it's willful, meaning that I am intentionally not following the way that God has set for me, that there's intention behind it, that it's willful, that it's deliberate. It's not, you know, sometimes we might backslide into something that God has called us to, and I keep falling short of it. I'm just kind of backsliding. I'm not doing it intentionally, or just a sinful moment in general that I'm not living up to God has called me to be. That's different than this. This is, I'm unwilling to be repentant. I'm deliberately doing it. And he gives us the characteristics, starting in verse 29. How much worse the punishment you think will be deserved by the one who has, and here's the characteristic, trampled underfoot the Son of God, meaning that I've devalued Jesus and who he is, that I'm walking on him, that I'm rejecting his gospel. Then he gives us another characteristic, and has profaned the blood of the covenant by which he was sanctified, that I'm rejecting the sacrifice that Jesus has made, that the sacrifice that he made, that it is unfit, that there's nothing special about it, that's what I'm doing. I'm rejecting it. And then one more. And outrage the Spirit of grace. This is the role of the Spirit, is to prompt us, to speak into our life, to give testimony about who God is. And I'm rejecting the Spirit. I'm rejecting his promptings. I'm rejecting his testimony inside of me. I'm rejecting all of those things. That's a characteristic of being deliberately sinful. And he's warning us against that. And then he says next, for we know him who said, vengeance is mine, I will repay. And again, the Lord will judge his people. It is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of a living God. And if you're reading that like me, I'm thinking, whoa, he's coming after. He's speaking right into something very specific. And that quote that he gave actually came from the Old Testament. It was Deuteronomy chapter 32. It was the end of the life of Moses. Moses' life was about over, and he sings a song in Deuteronomy chapter 32. And in his song, it was a warning to all of Israel. And so whenever the Hebrews writer started using this language, they would have known where it came from. They would have known who said it. They would have known why he said it. In Moses' song, it's a warning to Israel about God's judgment towards faithless people who had turned away from the promise that God had made with them. They had abandoned God after all that he had done for them in their lives over and over and over again. They had abandoned him. They were deliberately sinful, and he's warning them. Here's how I wrote this down. The warning, don't get caught up in deliberate sin. How? Great question. Thank you for asking. How? Here it is. By remembering what Jesus has done. By keeping a tight grip on the commitment that I've made to Jesus. By meeting continually with people that breathe courage into me to follow Jesus. That's how. One last section. He goes from a warning to an encouragement, but recall, he's saying, remember, recall the former days when after you were enlightened, similar to the warning, he said, once you know who Jesus is, you can't just willfully be sinning against him. And now he's saying, I want you to remember when you were enlightened, when you were encountered the gospel of Jesus and it changed you, you endured a hard struggle with sufferings, sometimes being publicly exposed to reproach and afflictions, meaning that people publicly persecuted you because you were following Jesus. They were publicly saying things about you, publicly persecuting you, and sometimes being partners with those so treated. For you had compassion on those in prison, and you joyfully accepted the plunder of your property, since you knew that you yourselves had a better possession and an abiding one. That not only did they publicly persecute you, they stole your things. There was financial, material persecution. You couldn't get things. You couldn't have things. They took things because you were following Jesus. And then he says this, for you have need of endurance. I love the word. Remember what he's doing. He's encouraging them to finish what you've begun, to finish what you've begun whenever it gets hard. What do you need? You need endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. What he's saying to them is that you've done this before, that you've experienced persecution. You've experienced the temptation to walk away, that you've experienced the hardships that sometimes come with this before. You can do it again. That's the encouragement. You can do it again. Then he quotes from a great Old Testament book called Habakkuk. In this Old Testament book, there's where this quote comes from. He says, yet a little while and the coming one will come and will not delay, but my righteous one shall live by faith. And if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. Don't shrink back. But what's he talking about? He's talking about the return of Jesus. That sometimes when we're waiting on Jesus to return, we get impatient and we're tempted to walk away while we wait. It's the same place that we're in right now. He's encouraging us to finish. He's encouraging us to finish. Don't shrink back. And then he says, but we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, saying that we don't shrink back. When we shrink back destroyed, meaning we're wasting our life when we start to walk away from Jesus. So endure, right? So endure. But of those who have faith and persevere their souls. What is he saying in this long section? Here's what he's saying. I'm going to use this word. He's imploring them. This is like the teacher getting down on their knees and looking you right in the eyes and trying to grab your attention and saying, look at me. If you've heard nothing else that I've said, hear this. He's imploring them to persevere through faith. You've done this before. You can do this again. And then you might ask, how? How do we do this? One more time, we could give it to you. We remember what Jesus has done. And because of what he has done, we have access to him. That we regularly approach Jesus, that we choose to regularly approach him, that I keep a tight grip on the commitment that I've made to Jesus, that nothing can move me off of what I've committed to Jesus, and that we meeting with a community, here it is right here, meeting with a community that breathes courage into us to follow Jesus. As the Hebrews writer would say, you can do it. You can finish what you've begun. Don't drift away.
You can do it, listening friend. Don't drift away. Finish what you begun with Jesus' help. You've been listening to a message by Pastor Matt Clark of CU Church. If you missed a portion, want to hear it again, or pass it on to a friend, stop by greatnewsradio.org or wluj.org and listen anytime under the Mark and Friends tab. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Media. God bless you and have a great day and night.